Well, they did it. Hollywood is rewriting Homer.
Don't.
Also, Trump is joking about annexing Venezuela. And Southern Baptists are once again heading into their annual meeting divided over reform, mission, and the future of the convention. But what do all three of these stories have in common? The question of inheritance. Who inherits the West? Who shapes its institutions? And whose kingdom are we ultimately trying to build? This is The Worldview, powered by ABWE on the EM Network. Before we jump in, a quick note for the pastors and church leaders who are listening or watching. A lot of you tune into this show not just because you want to think clearly, but because you're trying to shepherd people to live faithfully in a chaotic age. You're trying to do the work to build churches, make disciples, and help your people stand firm while culture shifts beneath their feet. Well, if you're looking for a missions and church planting partner that shares those same convictions, check out ABWE. Whether you're exploring short-term missions, sending long-term missionaries, planting churches in the U.S. here, or strengthening global partnerships, we'd love to help your church build the kingdom faithfully. So visit ABWE.org. On to the first story. Now, if you're like a lot of 90s Christian kids, you were thrilled when you heard that we'd finally be getting an Odyssey movie. And if you were disappointed when you found out what it was actually about, well, don't worry, you're only going to get more disappointed. Christopher Nolan's adaptation of Homer's Odyssey has become one of the biggest cultural flashpoints online in recent weeks, after a profile in Time and Variety confirmed Lupita Nyong'o as Helen of Troy, and other online rumors spread about the actress, now called Elliot Page, playing the demigod warrior Achilles. But to their credit, maybe they couldn't afford Brad Pitt again, so they immediately picked the next obvious second choice. Well, Elon Musk accused Nolan of showing total contempt for the Greek people, while Matt Walsh of the Daily Wire said that Nolan was too cowardly to cast the most beautiful woman in the world as a white woman for fear of being called racist as a result. However, I would like to say for the record that I did check, in fact, and my wife is in fact unavailable for this role due to her raising our five children. But I did check, to my credit. And unsurprisingly, there is a DEI agenda behind all of these picks. One user on X reported that to be eligible to win Best Picture at the Oscars, one must employ, one, at least one non-white / non-straight lead or significant role, two, at least 30% minor roles going to non-whites / non-straight people, and three, at least two departments headed by non-white / non-straight people. Now, immediately, some Christians instinctively want to dismiss this entire conversation as shallow culture war stuff. The type of stuff that's frustrating and maybe fun to spout off about online, but ultimately doesn't have any eternal significance. But I actually think something much deeper is happening here. The Odyssey is not just entertainment. It's myth, and myths are the memory of civilization. They preserve a people's understanding of the good, the true, and the beautiful. To deconstruct a myth, therefore, especially in a cheap or degrading way, is to undermine that entire civilization itself. In this case, Western civilization. And what's unique about the West isn't just its whiteness. It's the West's special historic relationship with Christianity. Yes, Christianity is global, not just Western. And yes, it was born in the Levant. Christ was crucified outside Jerusalem, the apostles were Jews, and so on. But in the providence of God, Christianity was raised in its nascent stages in parts of Europe. Acts 16 is that hinge point where the gospel crosses into Macedonia and begins transforming the West. So when Western European civilization is systematically undermined, mocked, dissolved, or detached from its own inheritance, Christians ought not shrug and simply say, well, race isn't real anyway, or the world isn't our home, so why does it matter? Rather, we should ask why Western culture itself is in the crosshairs and not any other culture. Because by eroding the West, one erodes what is easily the largest historic seat of global Christianity. That doesn't mean that Europeans are uniquely valuable in God's sight. And the gospel is, of course, for every tribe and tongue and people and nation. But what it means is that history matters, inheritance matters, civilizations matter. And there's a lesson concerning missions here for us, too. When woke ideology lands on a culture, it can only deconstruct it. It infiltrates, then undermines from within, like, appropriately enough, a Trojan horse. But when the gospel enters uncharted territory, it elevates cultures, preserves peoples, and redeems whatever goodness, truth, and beauty might lie latent within a pagan culture. The gospel civilized the human-sacrificing, loincloth-wearing barbarians of Western Europe's wastes, the way Legion the Demoniac was saved and ended up clothed and in his right mind. Now, sure, it may not seem like an attack on Homer's source material is an attack on Jesus himself. After all, Homer wasn't exactly a Christian.
Well, you should join my religion, Mo.
But the enemies of Western civilization and its Christian inheritance aren't anywhere near as careful in their distinctions as we might want to be. To them, it's all Western, it's all bad, and it must all be replaced. And when a Christianized or once Christianized civilization is undermined, the goal is to revert it back to its pre-Christian tribal roots. That move is not just about hostility towards a particular people group for whatever reason, but also hostility towards what built that people and what made their culture significant in the first place. Now on to our second story. President Trump sparked another media firestorm last week after saying on Fox News that he was seriously considering making Venezuela the 51st state because of its estimated $40 trillion in oil reserves. The White House later amplified the joke by reposting a Truth Social image of Venezuela overlaid with an American flag labeled 51st state. Acting Venezuelan President Delcy Rodriguez condemned the remarks, insisting that Venezuela is not a colony, but a free country. Now, some people rallied behind the post. Others scoffed. Some Trump supporters quietly hung their heads in shame. I, for one, immediately went out to buy gas because, you know, this post fixed gas prices somehow. But the interesting thing is that underneath the memes and the jingoism lies something profoundly human. We all long for empire. Human beings naturally desire a kingdom that imposes order, prosperity, security, and peace across the world, across cultures. And the New Testament addresses that longing very directly. In fact, the book of Acts unfolds in the shadow of Rome in such a way where I believe Luke is deliberately setting up Christ's kingdom as the true and better empire in Rome's stead. Some scholars have even noted the literary echoes between Acts and Virgil's Aeneid. For instance, in Virgil's epic, Aeneas, the titular character and progenitor of Romulus and Remus, famously escapes the burning ruins of Troy carrying his crippled father Anchises on his back, with his wife and son in tow, offering us an enduring picture of masculine virtue and filial piety that lasts to this day. Meanwhile, in the book of Acts, Luke, the author, appears to be turning this trope on its head by drawing his reader's attention to another Aeneas, who himself is the cripple and is healed by the apostle Peter. In other words, he's dependent upon the risen Jesus to do for him what he couldn't do for himself. The point is to set up a contrast. Rome founded its golden age through conquest, blood, and domination. Christ founds his kingdom through the blood of his cross. And it's a good reminder for us, whenever we long for the triumphalism that comes from belonging to an empire that's on the winning side of history as well. We should recognize that that instinct is natural, but we should redirect it properly. Only Christ can satisfy that longing, not Caesar. And honestly, America itself increasingly faces a question that it's avoided for decades. Are we actually a nation? Or are we functionally much more of an empire? Increasingly, we're already acting like one.
Me want more pointless social programs. Yummy, yummy, yum.
Now, politically, people can debate whether or not it's prudent or dangerous to become an empire. But biblically, Christians must remember that the Great Commission is not a mandate for annexation. We disciple nations. We don't erase them. Babel sought unity through centralized human power. Pentecost brings unity through the Spirit while preserving distinction among peoples and tongues. And that difference matters. And believe it or not, that actually leads us into discussing the Southern Baptist Convention. Because the temptation towards empire building exists within evangelicalism today as well. Heading into the June 7th and 8th SBC annual meeting, tensions continue to simmer over women in ministry, institutional drift, abuse reform, and the future direction of the convention. And of course, the failed law amendment still hangs over everything. By the way, I recorded a video about that on this same show, which you can see over here. Conservatives continue warning about doctrinal compromise, while other institutional voices increasingly emphasize cooperation and unity for the sake of mission. And underneath all of this is a very old tension. One side says reform matters, doctrine matters, boundaries matter, institutional fidelity matters most. The other side tends to say that cooperation for mission matters more. Stop fighting and focus on evangelism and church planting and partnership. And the truth is that both sides are identifying something real. But being comes before doing. After all, we are human beings, not human doings, as people have said. Missions alone is thus not a sufficient or solely sufficient ground of cooperation, although it's an important outcome of cooperation. Jesus himself said, after all, that the Pharisees crossed land and sea to make converts only to make them twice the sons of hell that they themselves were. So clearly, cooperation for the sake of outreach is not enough. Activity alone proves nothing. We also need orthodoxy. We need orthodoxy and mission wed together. Missions and practice hand in hand. We need to be doctrinally sound, morally serious, culturally courageous, confessionally faithful, and then we need to build. We need to plant churches. We need to send missionaries and strengthen institutions. My friend Eric Sammons made this point well this week during a discussion on X. He noted that every institution is being shaped by somebody, after all. The SBC and its institutions are no exception. If you believe that your convictions are true, then of course you want faithful men shaping the institutions rather than surrendering them, so that those institutions are free to do what they're supposed to do in service of the Great Commission. And that's exactly right. The SBC is not merely a missions funding pipeline floating in abstraction. It shapes seminaries, pulpits, churches, and culture. American culture, more broadly speaking, tends to go wherever the SBC goes first. It's the bellwether for American evangelicalism itself and for generations of future pastors. As the SBC goes, so goes our culture. So Christians need to reject two equal and opposite errors. One error is endless interdenominational warfare that forgets the mission entirely. We don't need any more of that. But the other error is sentimental pragmatism that sacrifices truth for institutional peace, going along to get along, in other words. We need conviction and cooperation at the same time. So the point is that you and I should find our band of brothers, whether you're in this group or any other group. Find your band of brothers. Fight for faithful institutions. Strengthen the churches that are worth preserving. Then get in the game and labor for the Great Commission without forgetting that doctrine and mission are not enemies. Truth is what makes mission worth doing in the first place. And if that effort fails inside of any network, denomination, or association, then you could always
join my religion.
Hi, my name is Alex Kochman. I serve in Christian missions, and I've spent years working with churches, missionaries, and families who are trying to figure out how to live faithfully in a disordered age. I've just released a book called Ordered to Love, Restoring the Biblical Order of Affections from the Household to the Ends of the Earth, because right now, Christians are being told that we must feel equal obligation to everything, everywhere, all at once. The family, the church, our nation, and all the nations, every issue is framed as urgent. Every cause is a cause for moral outrage. And that pressure, well, it hasn't produced more faithfulness. It's led to more guilt and confusion and instability. But the good news is Scripture does not treat love that way. In Scripture, God orders our obligations. He orders us to love, and then he shows us the right way to go about that. Love begins with him, and then it's practiced in the household, strengthened in the local church, exercised tangibly in one's own community, and finally carried outward to all the nations. But when that order is ignored, well, discipleship at home collapses and missions abroad loses all credibility. And so in order to love, I make a case for recovering that biblical order, not as an excuse to withdraw from society or stop loving people that are hard to love, but as the only way to sustain faithful obedience to the Great Commission over time. Now, this book is written for pastors, parents, missionaries, and ordinary Christians who simply want clarity instead of slogans and marketing. There's also a companion workbook for individuals, families, and church groups that want to apply these truths to real life. So you can find all that at orderedtolove.com. You can get the book from Founders Press. Visit the link in the show notes or go to orderedtolove.com. Orders are being fulfilled right now. Again, go to orderedtolove.com.